Hi, this is Jackie with Peer Trainer, and I'm here today with a really special guest. Her name's Ivy Larson, and I'm particularly excited. She wrote the Gold Coast Cure, it's actually a bestseller, as well as the Whole Foods Diet Cookbook. But what's different is that she was actually diagnosed with MS, I think about 10 years ago, or maybe 12 years ago, and these books were written as a result. So I'm really excited to interview her just to find out, you know, what she did that was different, because we all are sort of faced with this, whether it's us or a family member, where you go into the doctor and it's really scary. You get diagnosed with something and you don't have a lot of time to figure out what you're going to do. And Ivy really did something exceptional after this diagnosis. So Ivy, welcome.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm just, again, excited. I just want to dive right in. You know, tell me a little bit about what happened. You know, I know maybe it was 12 years ago when you were diagnosed, but I can't even imagine. I'm sure it was, you know, of course the word life-changing is not even an accurate or doesn't even, you know, really give the full weight of it.
Yeah, no, I'm 34 years old now, but I was 22 years old and, you know, really super, or at least I thought I was super healthy. I'd always been a cheerleader. I was an All-American cheerleader, a gymnast, a dancer, a track. I went to States in track, and I was actually working as an exercise physiologist, and my whole focus was on fitness, you know, I from like an exercise standpoint. And so I never really, you know, paid attention to what I ate or anything. And I always looked fit. I always looked healthy from outward, you know, from looking at me, you would think that, you know, I was just an average healthy looking 22-year-old. And so all of a sudden, it was the summer of, 1998, and I started having all these like bizarre medical problems. I was having bladder infections. I was getting like 3 bladder infections a month. I was starting to have incontinence, which was really, I mean, it was embarrassing, but it was also really interrupting what I was doing for a job, because I was teaching exercise classes and I was having like this incontinence problem, like, you know, 10 minutes into the exercise. I was waking up in the middle of the night, like 6 and 7 times going to the bathroom. I would like get in the car, and if I was driving more than 20 minutes, I'd have to stop and go to the bathroom.
Wow.
So this is, you know, totally interfering with my quality of life. I was jumping from doctor to doctor, and I had developed like numbness and tingling in my right leg. And then I had my right hip flexor. I lost so much strength in my right hip flexor that just even climbing a flight of stairs became like super challenging, because my right leg just wasn't working properly. So I'm going, and I live in Palm Beach County in Florida, and I'm going from doctor to doctor and really getting nowhere. I mean, you know, they would figure out that I had a urinary tract infection and give me some antibiotics, and then I would go and they'd say, you know, I'm just a nervous-natured girl. I should sit in a hot bath. I should sleep more. I should, maybe I'm doing too much exercise. But really, I was not getting in. Not getting to the bottom of things and definitely not getting an answer. And then all of a sudden, I had this episode where I thought I was getting another urinary tract infection, and one of the doctors had told me to drink a huge amount of cranberry juice. So I drank this cranberry juice, like probably 16 ounces, and went to the movie The Horse Whisperer. And right in the middle of the movie, of course, not in the middle, like within 10 minutes, of course, I had to go to the bathroom. So I go to the bathroom and I couldn't go at all, not a drop. And so at that point, I ended up in the emergency room, and it was something called urinary retention, where, you know, which you just can't go to the bathroom. And so the ER doctor at that point realized something was, you know, seriously wrong, and he suggested that I go down to the University of Miami and see a specialist, a urologist down there. So I went to see the urologist, and they did this series of medical tests, very complicated medical tests like video urodynamics. And at the end of the testing, the urologist said there was nothing wrong with my bladder, and so it must be neurological. And so I was sent to the neurologist. And I was given a physical exam, and then I was immediately sent, and it was like at 10 o'clock at night, I had an MRI, and then they came back with the results, and they said I was in the early stages of MS, and I was given basically 3 options. I was told there was a trial for a medication that was, it was in the third, or the human trial phase, so I could rush to enter that phase, but I only had like a week to enter the trial, or I could begin one of the FDA-approved disease-modifying medications, but then I was also told that those medications had a lot of side effects. They were contraindicated during pregnancy. That was one of the major ones. And at that time, you know, I was only 22 years old. I wanted desperately to have kids. So that was a huge factor. And then, of course, I was told they have, you know, flu-like side effects and that they hadn't been around for, you know, a long time. So who knows what kind of side effects would happen, you know, downstream, you know, 20, 30 years from now.
Yeah.
And that was very concerning. And then the third option was really just seemed so simple, and I couldn't even imagine how it could be effective. But the third option was a dietary and a lifestyle change, basically like lifestyle modification and a total overhaul of my diet. And like I said, I was not at all focused on nutrition. I really only thought that the only reason you would need to go on a diet or to change the way you eat is if you were overweight, had diabetes, or had high cholesterol, or, you know, high blood pressure or some heart condition. But and since I had none of the above, I always thought it didn't matter what I ate. In fact, I thought that one of the reasons I exercise so much is so specifically so I could eat whatever I wanted.
Right.
And so, you know, but because I think I was open-minded to the nutrition more so maybe than the average person, only because I already embraced exercise and I had already seen, you know, what the positive benefits and how powerful exercise could be. So I think I was, you know, more receptive to the dietary change than maybe the average person. And but at that time, I had nobody to fall back on, or I mean, I had my parents, but they weren't medical. They were not in the medical profession. They, you know, we're just sitting here, totally, you know, at the doctor's mercy. I mean, we didn't know what to think or who to ask a second opinion.
I'm sure people just go through that every day. I mean, what do you do if you don't have? Even
right.
if you have a physician in your family that's maybe, you know, a cardiologist can't really help you with this specific thing. You know, it's just such
exactly.
You're just faced with, what do I do now?
Yeah, and your head is spinning. I mean, I remember tears, you know, crying. I mean, it was, you know, just tears were like streaming down my face. And, you know, I was thinking the worst. Like, you know, when I thought of MS, I always thought, you know, you think of people in wheelchairs or people who are disabled. I mean,
they have to have an elevator to get through their house. And I've heard that, you know, that people build an elevator in their home. Yeah, me too.
I was just thinking the worst thoughts. And I had been, you know, exercise and fitness was such a huge part of my life. I mean, that was what I was doing for a career. And so the thought of a disease that would, you know, totally, it would change my life, I thought, more so than the average person, only because I was so, you know, involved in fitness and the fitness industry. And so I, at that point, contacted my good friend from high school who actually was my high school tutor when I was 13, he in eighth grade, and he was a junior in high school. He was assigned to be my math tutor, and he was like the smartest guy I knew in the school. He was like second in the country in the spelling bee and like super smart guy. So so he was like the only, and he was in medical school. He was at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, which is like, you know, the top three medical schools in the country. And he was a really, really good friend of mine. And so I thought, you know, he was the closest person that I had to bounce this idea of nutrition off of.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted him and said, you know, told him about the diagnosis and, you know, and I also told him what my neurologist was suggesting. And, you know, he first of all was like, who is this neurologist? Because, you know, you need to be on medication. I mean, what diet for MS? I mean, he thought the whole thing just sounded ridiculous. And I'm like, look, supposedly this neurologist is like a world-renowned expert and, you know, he's at the University of Miami. Could you just, you know, maybe just do a quick like background check on him, make sure he's up to snuff. And then can you just research this diet that he's recommending? And so he did that. I mean, he looked up the credentials of the neurologist and was blown away with, you know, the number of papers he had written. And he was a very well-respected, you know, neurologist. And then he started doing the research at the University of Pennsylvania, their library, on nutrition and as it affected MS. And, you know, he came back, he spent the entire day at the library and said, you know, he cannot believe that the research is out there, that they're not even teaching this or talking about this in medical school. And, you know, that the, yeah, it was like, and he said that the, from the research that he had spent just on that one day, and of course we've done, I'll get to the story in a second, but we've done more research since then. But, you know, he said that the diet seemed to have every bit as much of a powerful effect as the medicine, but with no negative side effects. So he said, you absolutely have nothing to lose, you know, by giving the diet a try. I mean, later on, you could always, it's not an either-or decision. You could always start the medicine, but mm-hmm. definitely, without a doubt, you should change your diet. Just like somebody, you know, who has heart disease or high blood pressure, I mean, or high cholesterol, I mean, without a doubt, you should modify your diet. And so
right.
whether or not you need to take medicine, is not, that's secondary. You know, the dietary change is should go without saying. And so since then, I actually married him. And so,
nice. Your husband is this person who researched this for you when you
yes.
got the diagnosis. Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was, you know, I have to say, because so many people would run away from that, you know. That MS is actually what brought us together. We had always been, you know, close friends, and there was actually a chemistry and connection in high school. But, I mean, the MS is really what brought us together, you know, is more than just friends. And
wow.
we started to research after, we got married a year in, let's see, it was in 2000, so it was like a year and a half after the diagnosis. And then I was pregnant 3 months after that, and I got pregnant so fast because I was so worried, you know, what if I need to go on these medications? Because I had decided not to go on the medicine. I decided to go the nutrition route. But I was also,
right.
in the back of my head, I had this huge psychological burden that, you know, at any time I could have this, you know, disastrous MS flare-up, and what if I need to go on the medicine? So I made a choice to get pregnant, you know, very early on. I was only 24 when we got married. So I had our son a year and 3 days after our wedding anniversary. And by this time, you know, we were really, I mean, Andy then started changing his diet too. And by this time he was in surgical residency. So he had already graduated med school and he was going through his residency, and we both started changing our diets. And the more we learned, and there was so much to learn, I mean, and the more changes we would make. And then when my son was born, I nursed him exclusively for the first 6 months. And then I started introducing him, you know, to whole foods nutrition. And then that was when I got the idea to write the book, because the more we learned about nutrition for MS and for applied to babies, and we started to realize this is not just the MS diet. This is a diet that's really helpful for anyone, and we're going to raise our son on this healthy way of eating too. And my husband started following it. He actually lost weight. Not that he was ever overweight, but he lost, you know, like 8-10 pounds, and
yeah.
his blood pressure was lowered. He was in stage 1 hypertension, and this was only at age like 28.
Wow.
So the power of nutrition.
So tell me, what is the diet? Like, is the Gold Coast Cure the dietary recommendations that you had received first from this neurologist? Has it morphed from there with your own experience? Tell me a little bit about what does the diet consist of?
Well, in a nutshell, the diet's basically a nutrient-rich and anti-inflammatory whole foods diet that's based on foods packaged in their most natural state. So it's like, you want to think of corn instead of cornflakes, you know, apples instead of applesauce that has had the skin removed and sugar added. So it's getting back to foods in their most natural state. It's really a lot of plant-based foods,
uh-huh.
But, you know, very low in animal products. And actually, the diet that I was specifically told about originally from my neurologist is a diet called the Swank diet.
Uh-huh.
And this is developed by Dr. Roy Swank, who is a neurologist, and the diet dates back to the 40s and 50s when Dr. Swank went on sabbatical, and he went to Norway, and he found that the Norwegians had a higher incidence of MS than the average population. And what was most interesting to Dr. Swank was that the Norwegians who lived along the coastline, who ate an anti-inflammatory diet that was really rich in fish, had an 8 times less incidence or 8 times reduced risk or incidence of MS compared to the Norwegians who lived inland, who ate predominantly animal fat, a lot of, you know, meat and cheese and butter and dairy. And that is a very pro-inflammatory diet. And so that was really intriguing to this neurologist, and he started his own research on diet and put his own patients on what he was calling the Swank diet, and he studied them for 15, 20, some of them even for 30 years. And his research has been published in Lancet, New England Journal of Medicine, very well-respected medical journals. And he's really the one who pioneered the connection between diet and MS. And then since then, there has been a lot of research. And, you know, his diet, there it still wasn't optimized. I mean, it was more, he didn't go into the in-depth of, like, eat more plant-based foods, optimizing your omega-3, omega-6 ratio. They didn't even know about inflammation back then. I mean, they weren't, although he knew that diets that were lower in animal fat, people would do better, you know, with MS. He didn't really know the why.
Uh-huh.
But fast forward to now, you know, 40, 50 years later, we understand more of the connection of why. And MS is a disease that's made worse by inflammation. It's not the only disease that's made worse by inflammation. There's numerous diseases out there that are made worse by inflammation, including heart disease, you know, asthma, arthritis, fibromyalgia, eczema, psoriasis. And all of these conditions, you can't cure them, you know, but you can greatly reduce your symptoms and drastically improve your quality of life by changing the types of foods you eat, because certain foods are pro-inflammatory and other foods are anti-inflammatory. And the foods that are pro-inflammatory are foods that, like animal fat, but not just animal fat, also like processed vegetable oils like corn oil and soybean oil and cottonseed oil, sugars, refined flour, refined carbohydrates, trans fats. And then other foods are very anti-inflammatory. And those are the nutrient-rich whole foods. And a lot of plant foods, really all plant foods, I mean fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and beans and legumes and whole soy, not isolated soy protein, but whole soy like tempeh and soybeans, fish, these are foods that are, you know, highly anti-inflammatory. And so if you modify your diet and you eat anti-inflammatory foods and you get rid of pro-inflammatory foods, which, by the way, happen to also be nutrient poor, then you can dramatically change the way you feel.
So is that really, that brings me, of course, because a question that I'm sure so many people have that are listening to this, is there a cure, meaning are you functioning? Do you feel differently? What's happened to you and what's happened? I mean, obviously you get diagnosed for a reason maybe, and I don't know enough about this, it's your blood levels or whatever it is. After having been on this diet, I guess now for 12 years, where are you now with the disease?
Well, I always knock on wood, because MS is a disease that's unpredictable, but my MRI has not changed in the past 12 years, and that's one of the main criteria they use to diagnose MS. My physical exam, when the neurologist first, the reason he wanted me to have the MRI is because when he did a physical exam, they used to only diagnose people based on a physical exam. This was before they had MRIs. And my physical exam showed symptoms, you know, showed the markers of MS. Like a Marcus Gunn pupil, just a variety of Babinski reflex, just a variety of different findings in a neurological exam that, you know, that point towards MS. Since then, though, my physical exams have, I mean, dramatically improved to the point where it's barely detectable. I still have the Babinski reflex and certain things, but they're not noticeable to me. They're only noticeable to a trained neurologist.
Mm-hmm.
I've not had a clinical exacerbation, which is another marker for MS, since that urinary retention episode. I have periodically had things like my leg will feel like kind of funny. It's hard to explain, but my leg feels like my right leg will feel different than my left, or I'll feel maybe a little bit of slight dizziness or fatigue, but there's no clinical exacerbation. And I mean, I think anybody who knows what I do and knows my daily routine would say maybe some of the fatigue, because fatigue is one of the number one complaints among people with MS. But I think if they saw what I do on a daily basis, they would say, you know, maybe it's just because I do.
Are you on any medication?
No. And that's the thing. I never went on the disease modifying medications. Those are the big medications, the injectables. I was initially taking medications for symptoms. I was taking Effexor, I was taking baclofen, I was taking amantadine, I was taking different medications for symptoms, and I've been able to go off all medications for symptoms, and I went off those very, very quickly after
I've told someone, I told someone about you, and I'm sure you've heard this before, or maybe you haven't, and maybe it's a surprise, so I certainly don't mean to surprise you with something, but I told someone about you, and the first response, it was a physician, and the first response was from the physician when I had said how remarkable, you know, the things that you, I mean, I didn't know how to say those things you just said, but obviously that you were managing this differently through the things you'd written about in the books, and his first response was, how do you even know she had MS? Like, I don't even believe what you, you know, I don't even know. And now, you obviously you've heard this before.
I have, yes, and it was shown, you know, by the MRI and by the physical exam, and you know, and also by really my symptom that I had, that urinary retention, was in some ways a blessing in disguise, because a lot of people with MS get these bizarre symptoms that they could be MS, but they could be a lot of other symptoms of other conditions too. But for urinary retention, that one, you know, main the big flare-up that I had, there really aren't many other conditions that would cause that. If you had prostate, you know, problems, but obviously I'm a woman, I don't have that, and I didn't have a stroke, and so it's that clearly something neurological. The urological problems were all ruled out, and so that in one respect was very helpful that I had that early on, because it helped point me in the right direction of what to do. The other symptoms that I was having could have been, you know, the incontinence, the urgency and frequency, the numbness and tingling in my leg. I mean, those could all be symptoms of other things too. But, and then, of course, the MRI showed.
Yeah, so the physician that answered that, I think, you know, was also just, I mean, how could one possibly be treating themselves without drugs? I mean, you know, sort of deducing, you know, there's a possibility that she never really had MS in the first place. So
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry, Jackie. I think that's a lot of the medical. You know, I do think, and that was my husband at first. He was, you know, he's trained in mainstream medicine, and that was his first response was, well, he didn't question the diagnosis, but he questioned the treatment, you know? I mean, he thought that he was just astounded that a neurologist at the University of Miami would even imply that nutrition could help control the symptoms of something as severe as MS.
And I mean, I'm guessing obviously also it's a little bit different when you're the one faced with the diagnosis, because if you want to live and if you want to have a life, I'm sure you're a lot more open maybe to exploring ways to treat something, especially if you want to have kids, especially if you're at a certain age.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think having been diagnosed at 22 versus, you know, 55 maybe, I mean, I just felt like, you know, I had so much to live for, and that the doors, I just did not want doors closed on me, you know, I had never had any serious medical problems, you know, so it was just like, I just felt like the rug was pulled out from underneath my feet, and I just thought, this can't be, you know, I just can't, I mean, I had plans, you know, I wanted to get married, I wanted to have kids, I mean, I just thought like, I cannot let this disease, you know, ruin my life.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, and it sounds like it hasn't. I mean, are you, I don't even know how to phrase this, but I mean, are you functioning in a way that you had functioned prior to your diagnosis?
I'm actually in so many ways functioning better and at a higher functioning than I did. I mean, I attribute my change in diet to, I mean, even the way I look. I mean, I feel like at 34, I don't feel at all like I look old. I don't feel like even my appearance has changed that much in the past, you know, 12 years. I think the diet has, I mean, it's helped with, I'm able to maintain a healthy weight. I don't have a problem. I mean, I have high amounts of energy. I am functioning at a very high level, and I just think that I don't think that if it were for something like for having that diagnosis that I ever would have changed my diet at that age, because I wouldn't have thought, well, you know, I would have thought, why, you know, because I would have thought that the only reason you would change your diet, like I said before, is if you're overweight, have type 2 diabetes or diabetes, you know, one or two, or have, you know, a heart condition. But
so
anything would have motivated me.
Tell me what your breakfast was prior and what your typical breakfast is now. And I'm assuming you eat breakfast.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Breakfast before anything packaged, you know, seriously, like a cereal, cereal and milk, like just your regular box cereal and milk. That would have been, you know, a classic breakfast. Those any kind of like packaged granola bar, you know, or energy type bar that's highly loaded with sugar and processed vegetable oils and flour, that type of thing. I would have definitely gone for that. A bagel with cream cheese, that would have been a great breakfast, I would have thought.
Yeah, and that's typical. I mean, Einstein Brothers Bagels is huge for a reason. I think that's a lot of people, you know,
yeah.
Even when they try to make a change in their health, they say, okay, I'm going to, you know, go away from sugar corn pops and an apple fritter, and I'm going to change it to a bagel with cream cheese. And sometimes they don't even know that the bagel is so full of sugar. I mean, I personally eat so much differently now that when I eat a piece of bread, I taste the sugar. It's as sweet as, you know, not as sweet as a donut, but it's pretty sweet.
It is, and totally your taste buds change. And this was back in 98. We're still the low-fat era, you know,
yes.
So even though I didn't go out of my way specifically to eat, you know, corn dogs and I mean, I did try to have a little bit of health in mind, you know, like if I ate cereal, I really thought that was healthy. I mean, it said right on the box, low fat, you know, healthy, you know, so I thought that, and you'd see like, you know, pictures of athletes on the cereal boxes and, you know, so I thought that was a good breakfast, or a bagel with cream cheese. I mean, I would have thought, you know, that would be great. This morning, when I mean, I don't eat the same thing every day. You know, sometimes I'll do like a nut milk smoothie with fresh fruits and chia seeds and hemp seeds. This morning, I actually had a mixture of chia seeds and hemp seeds that I mixed with a little bit of almond milk. And then I had some organic frozen strawberries because they didn't have fresh, they didn't have organic strawberries the other day, so I used the frozen ones. I go by that Dirty Dozen. I try not to eat conventional products that are of the Dirty Dozen, so I go, you know, like in strawberries.
Wait, what's the Dirty Dozen?
I've
never heard that before.
The Dirty Dozen are the like peaches and strawberries that apples that have very high rates of pesticides.
Right. I never heard that term before. Oh, that's interesting. Now, is that in the book? Is that in the Gold Coast Cure or the other
one? No, and it's something that I've learned, you know, just recently. I mean, it probably in the last like year or so. And, you know, I'm learning new things all the time. I mean, sometimes I want to go back to the Gold Coast Cure and be like, oh, I want to edit this. I want to add this, you know, because that was published in 2005. And, you know, nutrition is there's so much to learn that you'll never know it all.
Right.
And so I always keep an open mind and I always, you know, just try to continue my education in the nutrition department. And the Dirty Dozen is something I probably came across that like maybe 2 years ago, and then I read about it again, and then again, and then I finally thought, you know, there probably is something to that. Actually, my neurologist, Dr. Perlmutter, is the author of the Better Brain book, and he's my new neurologist, and he's very holistic. And the Better Brain book talks about...
And when you say holistic, you don't mean... I think people sort of hear holistic, and they think hippy-dippy, and, oh, let's just, you know, get some herbs, and it's not really like that, you know? That's sort of people's impression, though. Holistic really means they're marrying the nutrition with, you know, the traditional training.
Mainstream.
They have, yeah. I just
yeah,
wanted
with
to
mainstream
sure
medicine.
Clarify that.
No, that is absolutely right, because he will put you on the medication if he thinks you need it, you know, but he's not, he's a mainstream medical doctor, he's an MD, but he appreciates and understands the power of some of these alternative therapies, you know,
absolutely.
And not just nutrition. I mean, exercise is a therapy. I mean, there used to be, you know, I don't know, 15 years ago, they used to tell people with MS not to exercise, which is so ridiculous.
Wow.
Exercise, I mean, specific exercises that, you know, increase your strength, your balance, your coordination are so important for people with MS. But of course, it's not just MS. It's so many, you know, other conditions too. But he talked about the Dirty Dozen, and he talks about the importance of, you know, obviously it's very hard to be perfect 100% of the time, and I, in a perfect world, would eat organic everything, but I can't do that, you know, and still live a normal life.
Yeah.
So I try to pick and choose, and there are, you know, certain produce that have a lot of pesticides that I just try to, if I can't get them, you know, fresh, organic, then I'll go frozen. So strawberries are one of them. So that was...
Right.
How
so, you know, before we wrap this up, I have one question I'm sure that people want to know. What's, you know, what would be your, if you're diagnosed, and I know that your stuff is more than just, you know, applies obviously to more than just being diagnosed with MS, what's your number one recommendation you would tell someone, you know, since you have been through this and you've really learned how to not only manage it, but even just like you said, you have more energy in some ways and you're in better health than you were prior. What's the one thing you would have to tell people, you know, that are faced with maybe a medical problem or, you know, they've just left the doctor and, you know, what would you say to them? What would you say to like your sister or your family member, you know, people listening to this?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, not to give up hope. I mean, I think that's one of the, I think sometimes people take just, you know, they'll go to one doctor and the one doctor will tell them, you know, there's nothing else you can do. And, you know, and then they take that as the full, you know, the full story. And I think, you know, really there's so much out there that can be done for so many different conditions and so many different health problems. And, you know, you just have to take your own health into, you know, into your own hands, and you have to explore, you know, alternative therapies and talk to different doctors and different people. I mean, it's amazing what you can learn just from talking to other people who have the same condition you have and keeping an open mind. I think that is so important. You know, you can't, if you have a closed mind, I think you're way behind the eight ball because you can't really improve anything with a closed mind. So I think keeping an open mind and exploring different options is super important.
And people can talk to you. I mean, you just launched a new website, right? That where
we
people
did.
Can
it's,
find
yeah.
you. What is, I've just blanked on the name quickly.
It's hotandhealthyliving.com. And
that's right.
Yeah, can
that's right. And we'll provide a link right in this article as well. Well, thank you so much, Ivy. I have to say it's very inspirational because sometimes I, even though, you know, you can be in good health, but maybe your energy is lacking, you sit and you get some perspective of, wow, you know, I can have a wake-up call to my health even though I haven't been in a doctor and been diagnosed. And so I know that your book, what you were just saying, you know, if it can help people who have, you know, some sort of conditions, imagine what it can do if when you're in health and just making those changes, especially when you just
right.
said you're feeling better now than you ever have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks. And we'll, you know, this is the first part in a series, and we'll definitely be speaking to Ivy more and go a little bit more in depth to the stuff that she's doing. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Jackie.